Welcome to Urban Wilderness, the official Turkey Mountain podcast, a partnership of RSC Radio and the River Parks Authority. I'm Tip Crowley.
And I'm Ryan Howell.
And in this episode, we will be discussing the master plan. What does the Turkey Mountain of the future look like? Is it natural? Is it sustainable? Is it enjoyable? We'll talk about the community-driven plan for improving Turkey Mountain. Join us on Urban Wilderness.
Support for this podcast comes from Fleet Feet Tulsa Broken Arrow, focused on getting people into high-quality, properly fitting footwear, offering training programs that help lead people on their fitness journeys, from 5K to full marathon. For more information, visit fleetfeettulsa.com. And from Fat Tire Bike Shop, offering bikes and accessories for riders of all ages and skill levels, including mountain, road, gravel, and e-bikes. With locations in downtown Tulsa, South Tulsa, Broken Arrow, and Oklahoma City. More information at phattirebikeshop.com.
So in many parks nationwide, one of the big concerns is the space being loved to death. And therefore, it's important to plan for sustainability and for the appropriate number of visitors. Ryan, over at River Parks, you all have been working on the master plan for Turkey Mountain. What was it that created the necessity for this plan?
So Turkey Mountain has been an urban wilderness for 40 plus years now in Tulsa. And up until maybe the last 5 or 6 years, it hadn't been really utilized to the levels that it currently is. Starting around 2015, visitorship to Turkey Mountain began to increase and increase and increase. And then we had COVID hit, and then it just kind of blew off the charts with the number of people coming to Turkey Mountain. From 1980, when the park was created, until 2005, the part that River Parks controlled of Turkey Mountain, what people traditionally think of Turkey Mountain, was only about 100 to 125 acres. The other 600 acres that people traditionally thought were Turkey Mountain were actually in the hands of private individuals. Now, those private individuals actually never complained too much that people were coming on their land. They didn't seem to mind. At least they never told us about it. But in 2015, there was a proposed outlet mall. And the city of Tulsa basically stood up and said, hey, we would like to not have an outlet mall here. We would rather have urban wilderness and green space. Because of the people in Tulsa and how they banded together, City Council listened to the people of Tulsa and left it as an urban green space. But it still wasn't actually in River Park's control. And then, this kind of almost concurrently in 2016, the 2025 Vision Tax Package bond came up for vote on the City of Tulsa. And the City Council, because there was so much interest in Turkey Mountain at that time, the City Council actually worked into that tax bond about $7 million to acquire those lands that were traditionally thought to be Turkey Mountain, but actually weren't. And so because of the bond issue passing and the City of Tulsa voting on it, we actually were able to go in and buy those lands. And through either private donors that helped acquire them or that tax package, we were able to acquire most all of the land, at least a portion of the ownership, percentage of the ownership, or full ownership of the land in the area that is now Turkey Mountain. So once all of that land came under our control, we began to realize, hey, you know what? We know how to manage a park. We have a plan for our river park system, but we actually don't know how to manage a wilderness. And we don't know how to manage a forest. It's a little bit different management style. And so that's what sparked the idea for the master plan.
So the park and the visitorship have both grown over the past years. Creating a plan to manage that must be fairly complicated, wouldn't it be?
Yeah. And where do you start, right? You know, where do you begin to think about how you manage a huge forest, basically, a huge urban wilderness? And the very first thing that we did, I mean, literally the first thing we did, was we started asking the city of Tulsa what they wanted, what they wanted to see in a master plan. Before we ever set pen to paper, thought about any of the what would become the four pillars of the master plan, we went to the city of Tulsa and we asked them for their opinions. And we put out a survey online and we held public meetings where they could provide feedback. And we had over 4,000 public comments. 4,000 public comments. And it was just tremendous because we were able to take those public comments and use them to form the basis of what became our master plan, our management plan for Turkey Mountain. So we collated all of those comments because they kind of fell into four groups. They fell into one group for restoring nature. They fell into another group for improving trails. They fell into another category of improving access, such as certain areas of the park just aren't accessible to certain types of people, and how do we make them accessible. And then they said, we also want to see some additional kinds of programming at the mountain, you know. And so we divvied all those up and we looked at them real hard and we thought, well, what's going to be feasible here? What can we do to restore nature? What can we do to improve the trails? What can we do to improve access and all of these things? And then we took everybody's comments and we used those as the basis to help form the master plan.
So when somebody hears the term master plan looking at Turkey Mountain, this is essentially your goals for the near future, how the park is going to change, how the park is going to be managed. Essentially, it's an all-encompassing plan for Turkey Mountain.
Absolutely. It sounds a little scary when you say master plan. People always think of master plan as like some big development that's going to happen or things like that, but it's absolutely not the case. This is actually a plan just to restore the nature to Turkey Mountain and make our trails sustainable. That's all it is. And it's a guidebook for us to have a goal for something to achieve. It sets up the goalposts for us to be able to focus our energy, our resources on accomplishing that goal.
So as you mentioned, the master plan is based on four pillars. And the first of these is restoring nature. Of course, when people think of managing Turkey Mountain, they probably think about managing the trails, controlling the ruts and erosion, things like that. But the entire ecosystem is something that affects the experience of the visitor whenever they go to Turkey Mountain. Could you tell us about the goals behind this first pillar of restoring nature?
Probably the most important goal for the health of Turkey Mountain is to restore it back to its more natural state. Now, if you go and visit Turkey Mountain right now, you're going to head out there and you're going to see beautiful lush green trees and vibrant flowers and plants, and you're going to feel like you're out in the woods. Now, to an untrained eye, you're going to think you're in a beautiful, healthy forest. But when we started developing the master plan, we brought in the experts in forestry health in Oklahoma, the Oklahoma Forestry Service, and they told us that, hey, look, you don't really have a super healthy forest here. What you actually have is a forest that has been landlocked by highway, by development, and by numerous other human activity. And that human activity has adversely impacted the health of the forest itself. So to get into this idea of restoring nature, we have to talk about what did it look like in the past, right? What did Turkey Mountain look like before Europeans came in, started settling here, and building fences and building roads and grazing cattle and hunting and suppressing wildland fires, right? Let's just take a snapshot in time. Let's say 1850. So we know from the documents of the early explorers and the mappers that came out here, the Turkey Mountain in 1850, before it was really settled, before Tulsa was really settled by Europeans, was what's called an oak savanna, or part of the cross timbers region. Now, an oak savanna, think about like as you're driving down to Oklahoma City and you're getting closer to Oklahoma City and the forest kind of starts to open up and trees are now dotting the landscape versus, you know, being tightly bunched together. That's more of what we're talking about. And Turkey Mountain was more in that vein. Like if you were to take a picture of it 150 years ago, that's what you would see. Now, because of the dramatic elevation changes, it actually had several different zones of ecology in it. So it would have an area up on the highland flat areas that would have been this oak savanna. The areas down by the river would have been riparian. It would have had stands of dense forest. It would have been very mixed used. If you look at it right now, it's a huge dense forest, and that's all it is. But it is supposed to have woodlands and savannas and wetlands. It's supposed to be a mix of all these things. And so our goal with restoring nature is to try and get it back to that more natural state. We want to make Turkey more wild. We want to restore it to that so that it can foster the native plant and animal species, and it can become a better home for them in the middle of the city. It can become more urban wilderness. So we went to the experts in forestry health. They were the, after talking to the city of Tulsa and getting the input back and learning that people wanted Turkey Mountain to be a healthy forest, we went to the industry experts in Oklahoma. That was the Oklahoma Department of Forestry. And they told us Turkey Mountain can be healthier. And in order to make it healthier, you need to give it some medicine. And that medicine that they told us to prescribe is called prescribed burning. So think about, again, put your mind 150 years ago when it was just Native Americans living on the landscape. Lightning bolts would hit the ground on pretty much every, you know, here in Oklahoma, they'd hit the ground frequently. And they would cause small wildland fires. Those were part of the natural landscape. Those wildfires were part of what all of the plants and all of the animals were adapted to. It was part of the regime of their life. They knew they were coming, and they knew how to live with them. When Europeans moved in, started fencing everything off, and started farming the land and grazing cattle, they would stop every wildland fire they could, right? They would go out and they'd say, oh no, it's threatening my field, it's threatening my livelihood. And they would go out and they would suppress them. And this suppression actively happened for the next 150 years, and it still happens to this day. And what happens is when you get the suppression of the wildland fire, then, you know, you allow a forest to transition to a less natural state because you take away kind of one of the elements of its natural state. So without regular fires on the ground, the leaf litter and the dead plants kind of accumulate. And then when you get that accumulation, if a fire does happen, right, it's going to burn hotter and it's going to burn longer and it's going to be more devastating than if you had just a regular fire come along every few years, get rid of the little stuff on the ground versus now you've got, you know, you haven't had a fire in 100 years. You've got 100 years of leaf litter all stacked on top of each other. It's going to burn and become what's a canopy fire, and that's going to destroy the whole forest. Those are the kind of those big, large-scale fires that you see in California. The prescribed burning helps us restore it to nature. And we asked the Oklahoma Department of Forestry, and they're working on it right now. They're writing our prescription. And that is the medicine for Turkey Mountain. And that prescription is very interesting because it's very detailed in terms of how to manage the fire. Most people, when they think about fire on the landscape, they think about those large California fires, you know, that are hundreds of thousands of acres. They don't realize that you can actually control a fire exceedingly well if you can control the environmental conditions, or you can control the time when you set the fire with a prescription. So for instance, a prescribed fire has a prescription management plan that says if you go out on a day when the wind is between 5 and 6 miles an hour and the temperature is between 78 and 82 degrees. Now, this is an example. And the relative humidity is 34%, and the soil moisture content is 15%. Then the Oklahoma Department of Forestry has enough data from doing hundreds and hundreds at this point of prescribed fires that they can tell you the optimal conditions when you're going to be able to control your burn exceedingly well and not have very much opportunity for that fire to escape and become one of those fires that you would think about being a wildland fire. And so they're working on looking at Turkey Mountain very specifically, and they're working on looking at all the data that's available for Turkey Mountain, the types of trees that are there, the types of plants that are there, the seasons, what they look like in different seasons. And they are going to provide for us a prescription of when is the best time to do prescribed fire. But they'll be the ones leading the charge on Turkey Mountain's initial prescribed burns. In addition to doing the prescribed burns, we will also do what's called mechanical clearing of invasive species. So typically what happens is a crew will go out with chainsaws and remove tree species and plants that are considered non-native or hyper-aggressive species in a regime where the fire has been taken away, where the natural fire has been taken away. So, for instance, Eastern Red Cedar is very popular at Turkey Mountain. A lot of people recognize them as Christmas trees up at Turkey Mountain, and occasionally people will decorate them during the holiday season for Christmas. These Eastern Red Cedars are actually, they're native-ish, but they're hyper-aggressive now because the fire, the natural fire, has been taken away. And so they're becoming more and more dominant on the landscape. And what happens when those trees become more dominant on the landscape is that they compete for the resources that all the other trees, all the beautiful oaks and maples and other trees that we have up there, and they outcompete for those soil resources, right? And sunlight, and those kinds of things. And so eventually they'll take over. And we won't have those beautiful tall oak trees anymore. It'll just be like a small stand of Christmas trees. And that's not really exciting to ride around in. It doesn't keep you in the shade. It doesn't. You don't think about that beauty in a forest. So what we'll do is crews will be out in advance to chop down a lot of those trees so that when we do the prescribed burn, it'll burn those up and return those nutrients to the soil, return those nutrients for the other more native species for the oaks and the cottonwoods to have. It'll also get rid of a lot of the kind of scrubby plant grasses that have moved in over time. Ceresia lespediza is a real bad plant. You see it growing in the power line right away a lot. And what happens is there are native grasses and there are native small plants that produce berries that the deer and the armadillos and the birds feed on. But this Ceresia lespediza was put in by Europeans in the 1800s and 1900s because it was good feed for the cattle, and it's taking over dominantly. But so it's good feed for cattle, but not for deer and armadillo and all of these things. And so it's forcing out a lot of those plant resources that are good for those animals. And so prescribed burning actually is one way to help get rid of that and promote the growth of natural plants that produce the berries that the deer and turkeys and bobcats like to eat. That's where we're going with the prescribed burn management. So the prescribed burn management will actually also help get rid of a lot of the thick understory that is out there. So if you go to Turkey Mountain now, you'll see that it's like, it's almost impossible to see through the forest. Like it can be very claustrophobic in places. And that's not healthy for the forest because, you know, oak trees have a life cycle, right? They grow up, they produce seed, the seed falls to the ground, and then it wants to grow. But if you have a thick understory full of invasive species, it can't get the sunlight it needs to break through the canopy so that it can become a healthy oak tree that we know. And so that opens up kind of the understory of the area and improves their conditions. So it'll open up the view a little bit. You'll be able to see a little bit further. It'll promote wildflower growth. So a lot of the wildflowers are adapted to the fire regimes and, you know, will really, like, after the fire comes through, it'll be like kind of a black, you know, charred landscape for, you know, a few weeks. But what you'll see immediately afterwards almost is that it'll come back incredibly lush, incredibly green, full of beautiful flowers because now they're not competing with these non-native species, right? They all get the sunlight they need and they get the soil nutrients that they need without having to compete with invasive species. You know, we talk about a lot with restoring the forest health, but we also have Mooser Creek, which is on the... A lot of people actually haven't been to Mooser Creek because a trail doesn't really go by it, but it's the creek that borders the very north of Turkey Mountain, and it's a great riparian area. But what's happened is over the years and it's become channelized because development on the north side, and then, you know, it hasn't had room to typically, a creek will meander, right? So it'll switch back and forth typically. And what that does is that slows down the creek. So when it's flowing, it's going very slow, and that allows the fish to come up and lay their eggs and feed and do all sorts of nice things that fish like to do. But right now it's become very channelized. So it's like a slough where water just kind of shoots down. And that creates a bad erosion problem because the faster it's moving, it's picking up sediment, it's depositing it out in the Arkansas River. So in the master plan, one of the things we do hope to accomplish eventually is to restore Mooster Creek through some bioengineering. So restore the meander to the river, which is going to slow down the river. It's going to allow those sediments not to be carried away. But then it'll also be really cool because then it'll become a nice riparian area where riparian birds and gulls and great herons are able to fish for their, you know, fish for food. And so it helps restore that. And then people will be able to fish in there as well. It'll be a great fishing spot, honestly. So we want to, in sum, we want to move back to Turkey Mountain right now is a single ecosystem. It's a solid forest. But what we'd like to see eventually is it returned back to its more natural state. We'd like to see it have an area that is open prairie, an area that mixed savanna, that cross timbers region, an area that's solid woodlands and solid forest, and then those riparian areas. And that's going to provide a lot more varied landscape for people as they come to Turkey Mountain. So you're going to be able to ride through a prairie or hike through a wetland. I mean, those kind of things are going to add a lot of enjoyment and value to the mountain. And they're also going to help restore it to be that urban wilderness, be a better place for the plants and animals to live.
So this sounds like a really incredible undertaking, moving it back to how the land would actually be if we had never touched it in the first place. I think a lot of people are probably thinking, while we're talking about this, it does sound like a great project, but it also sounds like a lot of work. And will they still be able to visit the park while these improvements are being made?
It is going to be a pretty massive undertaking. But thankfully, we have the Oklahoma Department of Forestry kind of helping us lead the way on this. And when we do move forward with the prescribed burning, we will have to shut down the mountain for a period of a few days at a time. Because what will happen is we will go in on a day and we will shut down the entire mountain for access. We'll be working with the Tulsa Fire Department and the Tulsa Police to help us close down the mountain and also provide the safety for when we do these prescribed burns. We'll be able to do most of the burning all in one day. And then it'll take a couple of days that are kind of shoulder days for safety, right? So once you put a burn through there, you need to let it rest for a couple of days to make sure there aren't any hot spots or fires that may flare up. And so crews will still be working in the area, doing cleanup and doing safety checks, those kinds of things. And then after that, the mountain will be back open again. It'll look a lot different for a few weeks to a month, but after a few rains move through and as soon as the spring comes, it'll pop back up into a green, lush forest. And you'll hardly even know that there was a fire ever there.
And what is the time frame on this project?
The Oklahoma Department of Forestry is sitting at their desk right now working on this prescribed management plan for us. And we hope, if all the stars align and, you know, all our fingers are crossed in the proper way, that in February, March of 2022, we'll be able to put down the first fire on the ground at Turkey Mountain. Because February and March in northeast Oklahoma are considered probably the optimal times for prescribed burning.
So when this happens, make sure you keep your eyes on the Turkey Mountain social media pages to learn more about the process, when it will happen, and when you'll be able to access the mountain again. So as we've said, this is just the first pillar of the master plan for Turkey Mountain. So we've got a little glimpse into the future as far as nature goes, but we have even more aspects to talk about in our next episode. So make sure you join us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
So next time we'll be talking about the other core principles or core pillars of Turkey Mountain. We'll be talking about increasing accessibility We'll be talking about trails and improving them. And we'll be talking about additional programming that can be added to the mountain and expanding the footprint of Turkey Mountain.
So be sure to join us next time on Urban Wilderness, the official podcast of Turkey Mountain.
So until next time, go get lost on Turkey Mountain.